Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Welcome to Inspired Conversations. I'm your host, Mindset Elevation Coach, Intentional Living Guide, and publisher of the beloved Aspire magazine, which has been inspiring women to live deeper, more authentic, and joy-filled lives since 2006. And I am really excited to say that one of Aspire's sister brands, the Inspired Living Giveaway, is back for its 12th season. I invite you to visit inspiredlivinggiveaway.com and grab the treasure trove of gifts waiting for you. Over 50 transformational leaders, healers, coaches, and women visionaries have joined to offer a treasure trove of gifts waiting for you. Again, that's inspiredlivinggiveaway.com. So today we are talking with Francesca Grossman. And after thyroid cancer, Crohn's disease, and a slew of other autoimmune conditions ransacked her body in her 20s and 30s, she was left feeling completely alone in a chronic pain. But as I've discovered in so many conversations over the last 7 years, sometimes our pain, our mess in life leads us to the work that we're meant to do. And her journey led her to write her new inspirational, transformational, and supportive book, Not Weakness, Navigating the Culture of Chronic Pain. She is a writer and writing instructor. Her work has been published in the New York Times, Brain, Child Magazine, The Manifestation, Ed Week, Drunken Boat, and Word Riot, among others. She runs writing retreats and workshops internationally and leads an annual intensive workshop at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. I am so excited to have you here, Francesca.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You're welcome. You know, one of the questions I usually start the show with, because what I've noticed over the last 7 years, I have all women on the show, there's always been this thread, Francesca, that their journey led them to the work they're doing in the world. Sure. So let's go back to that time of you struggling with this chronic pain. Bring us back to that time when you were feeling so lost and disconnected.
Well, it's been for a long time. It's been most of my adult life. So I will say that I don't remember as a child feeling a lot of pain, but now that I look back on it, it's possible that my resting state was one of pain, even when I was a little girl. But I think the first time I really sort of had pain take over my life was in my 20s. I was working in New York and I had an administrative job, and my friends were going out, you know, and partying and having fun and going to bed with 4 hours and getting up and going to work. And that was so out of the realm of possibility for me that it started being clear that the way that my life was, which was a life where it was very difficult to even sort of walk up and down the stairs to the subway, was not what most people lived. And so it became very clear to me pretty quickly. And as I got sicker with first Crohn's disease, which is a sort of terrible disease of the intestines, where things get incredibly painful. And then sometimes you have significant urgency to go to the bathroom, and it can be incredibly embarrassing and incredibly humiliating and very painful. And then later with thyroid cancer, where I found out that I had a nodule that was growing sort of very, very fast and became sort of the size of a ping pong ball in a year. And then I had my thyroid removed. And during all that time was sort of my 20s and early 30s, pretty much my 20s. And what I realized was that I, you know, I was very young, and every time I went to the doctor, someone would say to me, "Wow, you're so young to have X, Y, and Z." And it became sort of my definition for myself of who I was a person who had chronic illness or a person who had chronic pain. And it in many ways defined the way I lived my life.
It's going to be so hard because once we own a story, right? Is that how you felt like you had taken on the label?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it becomes difficult when you want to sort of break out of that because you want people to know that you're in pain and that you're not sort of just in a bad mood or tired for no reason or ignoring them. But you also don't want to be defined by the label of always being in pain or the narrative that, you know, you can't do all the things that you hoped for your life.
How did you, and maybe you're still in the process because that's some deep work. Do you feel you released the label?
I feel like I embraced the label. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, I think that's great. So I love that. So you embrace it?
Yeah. So one of the things that I've learned over, I mean, I've been writing this book in one way or another and thinking about this in one way or another for probably over 10 years. But one of the things that came to me as I've been writing is that one of the things that makes it tolerable is to embrace it. And it's not easy because I'd really most days love to be able to get up and just bounce out of bed and feel fine or good. But that's not my reality. And so being able to say, this is me, but it's not the only thing about me that's interesting or beautiful or worthwhile, but it is part of me. And it is something that does define who I am and the community in which I feel comfortable. And it's if I ignore it or I don't embrace it or I don't accept it, then there's this inner struggle that just makes it much harder.
Yeah, it's so true. It's something I work with my clients on spiritual mindset, and I've had to go through myself. It's accepting what is instead of fighting against it, because the fight is, I think, more draining than what you're struggling with.
Absolutely. And you're not just fighting with yourself. I mean, you're fighting. There's a million sort of people day to day that they don't even know they're fighting with you, you know, you're trying to just exist in a world that's really not made for people who aren't able. And so you to fight also with yourself is piling it on in a way that's probably not helpful.
Yeah. And you notice too, it's almost, I'm not sure if it's true for you. It's like what I had experienced when I got some diagnoses. Probably around the same age you did. I'm 60 now. So I think I had a mini stroke at 40 and they thought it was MS or advanced Lyme disease and all this. So I had all these labels coming at me at that time.
Right.
And I remember laying there wondering like, oh my God, what is it going to be like? And for me, it was, I was angry at my body at that time.
Right.
Like, what the frick? Right. And then I realized, well, that's not what my body needs to hear.
Right.
If it's going to heal and if not heal, support me. Have you gone through that too with the relationship with your body?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think I'm not a therapist and I don't really know the terminology so well, but I do feel like dissociation is a thing that people in pain and definitely I do and have done, and I try to do it less, but the idea that you sort of take yourself out of your body in order to, when you can, and live either in your brain or, you know, in your heart or however you want to think about it, so that you can sort of ignore what's going on with your body is one of the ways that I always dealt with it. And that can be really difficult and not that great either, because then you're sort of looking at your body and it's deficiencies or pain or whatever words you want to use, only from an analytical place. And then it ends up being that you sort of are blaming yourself for the position that your body is in or the pain that your body is in. And when I think when we do that, or when I do that, because I can't speak for anyone else, but when I do that, it's much, much harder to give myself some grace and to give my body the grace that it really deserves. So I experience that all the time, and it's something I work on constantly.
I can relate to that. I remember when I was young, I had eating disorders, and that's a another disassociative state, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember, and like I said, that was probably my teens and late 20s, but I remember having a conversation with someone and said, you know what, I feel like I'm all in my head.
Yeah,
like in my analytical, and that this thing that is underneath my head is an appendage I got to drag around. Like I was that disconnected from my body.
Right.
And yeah. I had to heal and reconnect so that I could honor my body, listen to it when it was in pain, hear it and not ignore it, because I think that's what so many of us do. I can't imagine having chronic pain. I have some friends that have lupus and a family member, and I see the pain they go through. And like they said, sometimes you just want to pick it up and put it down and just have a break, but you can't, of course.
Exactly. So, I used to say I wanted to cut my head off and just function with my head and then just leave my body at home. So I definitely relate to that.
I can relate to that as someone with a recovering eating disorder. So you speak the language, but chronic pain, you're hearing more and more about it now, I believe, we know at least one person in our lives that are struggling with it, that they can't see the way out. So I think can't wait to dive more into your book, because I think it's going to be a powerful message and resource for those who are struggling, Francesca.
Oh, well, I hope so.
I know so. And we will be back in a moment. When we come back, I want to talk about what made you decide to write this book. And we'll talk about that when we're back in a moment, my friends. In the meantime, visit Francesca Grossman at francescagrossman.com. We'll be right back.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Inspiration for a woman's soul. Aspire Magazine. Inspiring and supporting women on the path of self-discovery. Claim your free digital subscription today, which includes access to thousands of dollars of personal development bonus gifts from Team Inspiration Partners. Claim your Aspire Magazine subscription today at subscribetoaspire.com.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Consistently attract soulmate clients, begin showing up on brand, monetizing on your calling. Welcome all spiritual coaches, leaders, healers, light workers, and practitioners to a show that turns you on in your business and amplifies your magnetism. I'm host, catalyst, and spiritual business coach Rosalind Fung, and I'm here to journey with you into the juicy and help you discover where the real gaps are. Ignite your mindset and soul with strategies and systems as each episode takes you to the sweet spot that activates your soulgasmic business by tuning in on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Mountain. Join me for your light language activation and let's magnetize and monetize.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Inspired Conversations. With me today is Francesca Grossman, author of Not Weakness, Navigating the Culture of Chronic Pain. So right before the break, you shared your journey and it's led you to write this book. So what made you want to dive into this whole culture of chronic pain?
Well, I think there's kind of two sides to that. The first is that the way that I process everything is always writing. I've been writing and teaching writing for a very long time. So I think there are a lot of ways to heal or accept or deal with chronic pain or anything that's difficult in life. And my way has always been writing. So it was always clear to me that I wanted to at least confront my chronic pain from a place of writing. But the reason that I wrote this book in the way that I did, which is a series of interviews that I worked on with women who live in chronic pain from all kinds of things, is that what I actually just woke up one day and I realized that even though I had been reading about statistics and data about women in this country who have chronic pain, I didn't know any people who I knew had chronic pain, even though I of course did. But in my reality, I wasn't talking to people who were sharing that they had chronic pain or that they struggled with chronic pain or illness. And I thought that was so interesting because if the data and statistics are to be believed, then there's, you know, tens of millions of people who struggle with this in our country. And I realized that there's had to be some reason that everyone was quiet about it. And I certainly am quiet about it. I had a friend call me just last week and say, you know, I just read your book and I had no idea that you were in the kind of pain that you describe. And we do that because we don't want to be labeled as someone in pain. We don't want to be labeled as weak, which is a whole nother conversation. And because of that, I think we're quiet and we don't talk to each other. And then we don't know that each other exists. And what I thought I could do with this book was to sort of talk to and reach out to women in pain and people in pain. And like you said, everybody knows someone in chronic pain, even if they don't know how severe it is or even know that it exists. So I wanted to offer sort of a navigation, a chronicle of chronic pain in our world so that people could feel a little less alone and they could feel like they weren't navigating this world without the community that's obviously there, even if it's quiet.
Well, I can speak to this in so many levels. Is when you're struggling with something like chronic pain, I think that's a big belief that, well, if people are gonna see me as weak, they're gonna see me as a burden. So they keep it to themselves.
Right.
And so there's, like you said, they're quietly suffering instead of coming together in community and letting themselves be heard. So I'm curious, how did you go about finding the individuals that you spoke to for the book?
Well, it was a pretty organic process. I started thinking about it, and then I started an Instagram page that at the time was called In Pain Stories, but now is just my name, Francesca Grossman Books. And I just sort of asked people to ask people. So it wasn't a hugely scientific collection, but I did end up getting hundreds of emails that first few weeks that I put out this call from people, either people who knew me, and so they were reaching out to say, I have chronic pain, or my girlfriend or my daughter or my mother or whoever does, or it was people who had been told by one of those people that I was someone that they could talk to. So it took me a long time to sort of sift through all of that and figure out the people who had sort of common themes to talk about, because I wanted it to be coherent and make a lot of sense and also reflect and contrast with the data that I had already sort of been researching. And I wanted to make sure that it, you know, demographically covered enough kinds of people that I felt like I was being at least, you know, qualitatively diverse. So I did, you know, in true sort of me fashion, which is to sort of throw out a net and see what I catch. That's how it went. And I think that what was nice about it was that people who are involved in the interviews, I interviewed 21 women and I ended up featuring 11. And the people that I worked with really, really wanted to express their stories and tell their stories and share the narrative with other women who are in pain.
It's so powerful. And did a lot of shame come up as a topic in those stories?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Have you experienced that yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
what's the shame tied to? Like the shame of what?
Well, I think there's a lot. I spent a lot of time on this in interviews and on the book and in my research, but there's shame around everything from what we just discussed, which is being weak in our society that loves heroes and loves strong people. And, you know, we love to rehab a decrepit house. We love to make things stronger and better in our culture. And there is sort of a suffering and silence mode that we all, for better or for worse, and I would argue for worse, end up sort of shrouded in. But there's also just the shame of not being able to be the person that you were hoping that you would be, whether it's as a partner or as a mother or as a friend or just in work or in hobby or in, you know, sport, or there's a million things. And I think there's shame around focusing inward, you know, especially as women, we're told over and over that whether we have children or we don't have children, or we have partners or we don't have partners, one of our jobs is to be the caretaker and to be somebody who is helpful. And sometimes when you turn inward, when you have pain or chronic illness or other sort of chronic issues, that's not possible. So there's a lot of shame around that. There's also shame around the specific pain. I mean, for me, it's an intestinal pain, and that can just be incredibly humiliating and shameful. And I think there's many, many other diseases or causes for pain that people feel shame around.
Yeah, I can really, I'm just feeling like the energy as you're speaking of the sad part is the carrying of the shame, right? Like, why should they or you feel shame for something that's not even in your control or my control? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That's the hard part. So what you brought up, relationships and all of that. So what has living in chronic pain done in your own relationships?
Well, it has defined them in many ways. I've been with my husband since we were 19 years old. And the entire time I was very sick and very much at the beginning of severe pain, I just wanted him to leave. Because I couldn't understand why somebody young and able and with this exciting new life ahead of him would have any interest in staying with somebody who couldn't move or didn't really have that much belief in her future. And, you know, it's scary to tell someone that or to want that, because then maybe you're going to be alone, and maybe there won't be someone else who is willing or able to be that kind of support to you. And so it defined our relationship in a very major way, sort of once I was diagnosed with Crohn's and then subsequently colitis. And then, you know, when I had my thyroid cancer and when I had everything, I mean, until we got married during that, which I was also very nervous about. And then we had children, and I was very concerned about having children, not necessarily because I would necessarily have more pain, although that did happen after I had them, just because it was so physically demanding. But also because I just didn't have a firm belief in my future, and I didn't feel like it was fair to him or to them to bring people into the world and not know what was going to happen. And so my relationship with my children, I think, has been affected by having pain. And I hope that in many ways it has actually, I don't know if you could say it has been a positive, but it has been something that makes them look at the world a little differently from the way that they would look at it with a parent who didn't have pain. But, you know, I spend a lot of time with them. I work from home. And I don't work a traditional job. So they're a little bit older now, but when they were younger, I spent a lot of time with them, which I think is a really wonderful thing. But I wasn't able to, you know, I run with them or lift them up as much as I wanted to, or go out and do some of the fun things other parents were able to do. So it has certainly defined my relationship with the people I'm closest to and the people I live with. And then further, it defines my relationship with my friends, because I often have to cancel. I often don't feel well enough to be with them, which is a hard thing to say to people. you know, I can't come see you after many months of not being able to see you because I don't feel well and my body has to be more important than my relationship with you is not always something you want to tell people because you love them and you want to see them, but you don't want to see them when you're in pain, which is all the time. So it's challenging.
Yeah, it's just walking that fine line. And as you're speaking about your children, it's like they're going to grow up with like a compassionate heart, right? Because they've seen suffering.
Right.
So I think it has given them or anyone that witnesses it from such a young age, more compassion for what others are going through silently.
Yes.
Because they're witnessing it from the inside, right? But maybe some of their friends as they're growing up could be suffering in silence. So I think there'll be a ripple effect there, my friend. We're going to take another break. We will be back in a moment with Francesca Grossman of francescagrossman.com. Be sure to check out her book, Not Weakness, Navigating the Culture of Chronic Pain. We'll be back in a moment.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Are you struggling to grow your mission-driven business in a way that feeds your soul and fulfills your purpose? When you discover your unique human design and divine blueprint, you'll feel empowered in your business, aligned with your inner wisdom, and open to the flow of abundance and success. Nancy O'Keefe is a certified human design specialist and intuitive business coach, successfully coaching entrepreneurs for over 25 years. She is passionate about helping you understand your divine design and your personal formula for success. She knows what it takes after creating her own multi-seven-figure firm. Nancy helps women peel back the layers of who they've been taught to be to reveal who they truly are, so they can build an abundant and sustainable business that feeds their soul. Schedule your complimentary call today at nancyokeefcoaching.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone? Taking pictures?
No. I'm asking it questions.
Like what?
Hey, Bobo, do flowers have best friends?
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I don't know that.
Hey, follow me. I want to show you something. Look, flowers do have best friends.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Inspired Conversations. I'm so grateful that you are circling up with us here today. I am with Francesca Grossman of francescagrossman.com, writer, writing instructor, and the author of the recently released Not Weakness. Be sure to grab a copy. So what did you walk away from after talking with so many women living in chronic pain? What's something we should all know?
I walked away with a lot, but I think the most important thing I learned is that there are so many more people than we expect that live in chronic pain and whose stories are worth hearing and whose stories, once we do hear them, will make everybody better. I mean, I think I learned over and over that pain, no one's experience and no one's journey is the same. But there are common themes and threads that sort of go through all our lives, people who are in pain and who are not in pain. And people who are in pain who I talk to have something to share with the world that's gonna make the world a better place, make people more compassionate, make people understand more, and make their lives better. Because I think one of the things about suffering in silence or not sharing the whole picture with the people around you who love you is that even though you feel like you're protecting them and maybe protecting yourself a little without giving them, by not giving them all the details, what you're actually doing is closing yourself off from them. So what I learned is that even if it's difficult, even if it's painful, sharing our stories with each other is one of the ways that we might be able to accept and embrace our lives in pain.
So beautifully said, my friend. And what is the most surprising takeaway from interviewing these women and writing the book? And I know that like kind of crosses over what I just asked you.
Yeah, no. Actually, one of the most surprising takeaways, and this is partially from talking to people and partially from research, is around the issue of pain medication. And this is a big, huge conversation and not necessarily one that I'm an expert at all. But I talk to a lot of women about pain medication and other therapies. And one of the things I was most surprised to learn is that most people who are addicted to pain medication actually are not people who are prescribed it. And I did not really understand that. I sort of had this idea, I think, from all of the media and all of the information on sort of the opioid crisis, that if you took it for too long, you were going to be addicted to it. And it's just simply not true. There are a lot of people who do get addicted to it. I think it's between 12 and 15% of people who take pain medication do become addicted, but that's, you know, a lot of people who don't. I didn't expect, I guess this is what I really mean. I didn't expect to feel after talking to people who take pain medication like it was maybe the right thing for them to do. And what I also didn't expect was how judgmental I was going to be about it, because I don't take pain medication mostly because of the way that my stomach behaves and how pain medication is with stomachs, which is not great. But you know, I had sort of built up in my head that taking it for too long was always a terrible idea. And what I learned by talking to people and by doing the research is that's simply not true. And I need to, you know, rejigger the way that I think about it. And I think about it across the board. So that was incredibly surprising to me and really humbled me and put me in a new place of being curious about it and being accepting of it.
Yeah, being more compassionate for their journey without those projections. Because I always have the same thoughts too, mostly because I had a dear friend who had spinal surgery. They had found like a ganglion cyst that he had let go and had gone around his spinal column. He had the surgery, and that's going back like, God, 24 years when I think it was Oxy had just come out. It was at the beginning.
Yeah.
And this was a bodybuilder, health nut, and they gave him Oxy and went into addiction. Yeah. A 3-year downward spiral. And thankfully, he's great now, but that traumatized me for life, because the one person you would never have thought it would happen to, health, fitness buff, all of his life. And so I had the same thing, like, no, you don't want to take that. You don't want to take that. And I'm not just talking about OxyContin, I'm talking about others, because I had that fear that they would become addicted. Right. Is that kind of the energy of what you were thinking too?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think when we see it happen, that's how we define it. Because I've had experiences watching it happen with people too, people I love. But we don't see when it doesn't happen.
Exactly. That's what I see. Right. We see the worst case scenario, but if I'm the one in chronic pain and I have no joy and pleasure in life, why wouldn't I take it?
Right.
If I can have some more quality. So I can see both sides now.
Yeah.
But for a long time, I had that story. And, you know, like I was hospitalized, I think, twice in the last year for double emergency surgeries for my colon. Oh. So I can relate to you, my friend.
Oh, sorry.
Oh no, I'm healthy, healed. I call them my goddess wounds. But they, you know, when you have emergency surgery and I wake up and they're like, you're on morphine and this other stuff, I'm like, get that shit out of me.
Right.
And so I wasn't being a martyr. I just made a choice. And I never filled all the prescriptions they gave me to navigate coming home with visiting nurses and stuff. And again, I didn't let myself suffer, but I chose different ways to do it. Although, you know, I look back now, it's all because of the story I had and witnessing what I did 25 years ago.
Right.
So But I get both sides. I have a friend that's, you know, going through cancer and has colon cancer and multiple surgeries and chemo. And believe me, she needs those pain meds.
Right.
And I've supported her in taking them because you want quality of life. So that's such a tough story. What about, did you notice that all the women you interviewed were, was there two sides of that same conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably it rested a little more heavily on the side of accepting it, because the truth is it works.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't always work forever, and that's a question. And you also don't know if you're going to be addicted to it when you start. So that's something to think about. But I think for the most part, when I talked to women about pain management, and I listed the things that the CDC and that doctors suggest you do instead of pain meds, everybody felt similarly to the way I felt when I read them. And there's things like, you know, exercise and meditation and taking ibuprofen and medical marijuana and things like that. We all kind of just laughed at all of that. I mean, it's all a little bit helpful, but it's not like having something that gives you 3 hours of relief. I mean, when we're talking about pain medication, if you take a pill, in my experience, you know, you get 3 to 5 hours of real sort of relief. But it's a relief that's very different from, you know, meditating or doing yoga or even doing any sort of marijuana intervention.
Those are short windows of comfort in the experience, where pain meds give you so much more peace for a longer period of time.
Exactly. And I don't know. I mean, I have pain in my stomach, and when you take pain medication, it makes it worse. So I can't speak from a place of really knowing, but there were 3 or 4 women who take pain medication and they will never give it up if they have a choice, forever. And then there were other women who expressed that they will take it when things are severe, but then they will do their best to pull back because they do worry about addiction or dependence and withdrawal. And then there were a few people who, like you know, you were saying, had fear about it and or had stories from their lives that made it so they took it as infrequently as possible. And there are some people I spoke to who don't take it at all.
Yeah, so it was a wide range.
Yes.
And so are you doing any speaking or anything on this topic now that the book is out? Just so if others want to connect with you and learn more. I know you can get details on your book at franciscagrossman.com, but I'm curious, on a personal level, do you think you'll be holding workshops or anything to bring women together on the topic of your book?
I would love to. Right now I'm doing a lot of small sort of readings and Q&As and that kind of thing. I'm doing something at Newtonville Books and in New York at a colleague's, you know, home. And I'm doing that kind of thing right now, mostly because those are the things that I've been invited to. And those are the things that feel community driven. And that's one of the main goals of this work. But I, you know, I'm open to doing all kinds of things. I think there are communities of women and of people who live in pain or with chronic illness for whom knowing more people and knowing ways to talk about it would be helpful. So I'm hoping that I get to do a lot more of that.
Yeah, so we'll put that out there. If there's any women's organizations that have a following of women in chronic pain, maybe they belong to a health-related organization. We'll put it out there to grab a copy of your book, Not Weakness, Navigating the Culture of Chronic Pain, and also having you a guest, either virtually or in person. I just think it will open up so many more conversations and hopefully, you know, remove the shame that they may be carrying.
Yeah, I hope so. That would be great. Thank you.
You're welcome. We're going to take our final break and come back for the last segment. And in this segment, Francesca, I'd love to talk about the other side of the work that you do, because you also have a bachelor's and a master's from Stanford University, a doctorate from Harvard, University in Education, your acclaimed instructional manual, Writing Workshop, How to Create a Culture of Useful Feedback, is used in universities and workshops all over the world. So let's talk about that, my friend.
Sounds good.
We'll be back in a moment.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Are you feeling the call to unleash your feminine wisdom, hone your empathic gifts, and rise as the goddess you are? You're not alone, my beautiful friend. Crystal Cockerham, spiritual mentor and certified Red Tent facilitator, trained in both shamanic and priestess practices, works with awakened, empathic women around the world to unlock their shackles of pain, shame, and self-condemnation so they can reclaim their sovereignty and liberate themselves from the world's perceptions. As the founder of Wisdom Awakens and an international best-selling author, Crystal uses her own intuitive blend of spiritual midwifery and energy healing to support women on their journey of transformation. You'll find supportive guidance and community in Crystal's programs, retreats, and sacred offerings. If you're feeling the call to embrace your feminine power, learn more about Crystal's supportive services at crystalcockerham.com.
Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
This is Kathy Beal, host of Celestial Compass, featuring astrology you can use. Celestial Compass points you to what's going on in the sky and what you can do with it down here on Earth. We also explore fun, effective, and cosmic tools for navigating this adventure we call life. Join me the first and third Monday of the month at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Celestial Compass. It's enlightening, entertaining, and empowering.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. There is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to Black and brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
You're listening to Inspire Conversations. Thanks for joining me and Francesca Grossman of francescagrossman.com. So we're going to do a little turn here, but really it all relates because you've been a writer at heart for years, and that is what brought this book to life. So you teach writing workshops.
Yeah.
I invite you to share your journey that led to that and the work you're doing now and how people can work with you.
Well, I've been a teacher for a very long time, first with young people, meaning, you know, kids. And then in the past many years with adults, mostly graduate student adults. I started writing as a child mostly because I was a quiet kid, loved to read, loved to watch TV. I loved stories. And I wanted to emulate all of these amazing authors and creators that I saw. And so I started writing, you know, the kinds of things you write when you're a kid. And then I studied writing and I studied teaching. And I started thinking about how writing can be both cathartic and healing, but also can be analytic and prove something. I was never a math-minded person, but I appreciated the fact that math works to prove an idea you have. And I think that writing can do that too. And it can certainly, through interviews and research and data collection, you can get to a point where you can have a thought or an idea or a theory and work to prove it. So I've always written, I've always taught writing. I work with an incredible writing teacher, professor at Harvard named Nancy Summers, who ran the Harvard writing program for over 20 years. And she does a lot of work in feedback, in giving feedback for improvement. And so I studied under her. And what I realized was a lot of the workshops and the writing workshops I was going to and taking as a participant or a student weren't actually giving the kinds of feedback that lead to improvement. And what I mean by that is they didn't, you know, often there's a lot of competition in those kinds of classrooms, and there's a lot of trying to impress the teacher and feeling very precious about your work. And the truth is that if you can sort of put all of that to the side and think about what actually improves work, which is revision and editing and moving forward with work and sometimes moving backwards with work, you can really improve your own writing, and you can improve the writing of the group that you're working with. So I started focusing on that, and then doing a lot of that in my own writing and my own work in workshops. So I have been teaching both students who are interested in writing and also students who are interested in teaching writing for a very long time, both to teach how to write personal narrative and how to tell a story in a way that's compelling and works to share within a community, and also how to teach other people to do it.
So what types of books do most of the authors who work with you, what kind of books are they publishing?
Mostly memoirs and other personal narrative essays, books of essays. I mostly work in creative nonfiction. So I work with people to try to figure out what they want to say, the story they really have to tell, and to tell it in a way that's compelling and that makes people want to listen and makes people, most importantly, feel like they understand and they can sort of say, oh, right, me too. Because the most important thing about a memoir, even if it's about something that nobody else has experienced, like maybe you ended up in the woods by yourself for 9 days and you survived, and you know that doesn't happen to many people, but everybody's experienced loneliness and everyone's experienced yearning for survival and a million other things. And if you can take something personal and make it universal, then that's where your audience is going to grab on and your readers are going to really love your work.
You speak in my words, my friend. I also own a book publishing company since 2013. So I've published the stories of 260 women. We have our 20th book coming out in November.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's all about storytelling. Right. So we guide them through our authentic storytelling process, which is one of our trademarks. And it's exactly what you said. Every single woman's story is different, but when a woman reads it, because my editorial team guides them through our proven storytelling model, every woman who reads someone's story, even if they haven't had the experience, gets the emotions and feelings and the truth of that story, because it's written with such vulnerability, right, and authenticity, mm-hmm. that every story connects with another woman.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I could just feel the love you have for what you do. And it's such a blessing, because I healed my life through storytelling. Right. I was a former welfare mom, runaway high school dropout, queen of self-sabotage, you name it, and transformed my life. And I've been an entrepreneur now for 30 something years.
Wow.
Even back when I got off welfare and started the first business I had, back in the 90s, I started doing motivational speaking at women's shelters, Simmons College of Graduate Work, many other places. Yeah. And I used storytelling to connect with the audience.
Right.
But I didn't identify it as that. It was just organic to me.
Right.
Now, looking back, you know, when you look back in your life, said, holy, I've been using storytelling for 32 years. Mm-hmm. And then the book publishing company came. So it's like really sacred for me, because I think when women can own their stories and their journey and see the wisdom and lessons and insights gleaned from that journey, it helps them look at their past in a completely different way. Have you discovered that with your writers too?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
it's,
I think
healing. It's,
yeah, it's very cathartic. It's very healing. And it's also, you learn a lot.
You learn so much. And we're guiding right now, actually, 22 women in a book that's coming out in November. They're most of them already submitted their first draft and they're going through editing. But when they first join the project, I say to them, listen, this is not just words on a page. The way we have authentic storytelling is it's going to be as healing for you to go through this journey as it is for the woman who reads it.
Right.
And they're all like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Till they start writing, they're like, oh, my God, it's the most vulnerable thing I've ever done.
Right.
Have you had that come up too with your writers, is those vulnerability and visibility triggers?
Absolutely. I mean, I think one thing that you have to grapple with when you're writing a personal story is how personal you're going to get. And what I've learned is the more vulnerable and more authentic you can be, the more you connect with your reader. And that's the ultimate goal. And it doesn't mean you have to say everything that ever happened in your life or everything horrible that ever happened in your life. But you have to be willing, and I see writers willing to do this all the time, to just be brave and believe that the rawness that they are sharing is going to be something that connects, because that's the whole point.
Yeah, so true, so true. I just love the work you're doing in the world, my friends. So they can learn more about your writing offerings at francescagrossman.com. Is there anything you have coming up? This will be airing on June 6th. Is there anything you have coming up this summer that you'd love people to know about?
I'm actually not going to have anything this summer because of the book, but they can definitely check back on the website for things in the fall.
Wonderful. And again, everyone, I invite you to visit francescagrossman.com and grab a copy of a book, Not Weakness, Navigating the Culture of Chronic Pain. And you know, even if it's not you that is in chronic pain, you may have a friend, a loved one. Give them this gift so they know they're not alone. So they know that there is others out there struggling. And by reading this book and the stories within it, they're going to maybe look at the shame that they're carrying in a completely different way. So any last minute wisdom you want to share, a message for those who are listening that are struggling with chronic pain?
I think what you said is really important. I think that it's really important to remember that there are people who understand and there are people out there who want to support you. And whether you're in pain or whether you know someone or love someone in pain, that is true.
It's such an important book, and I'm so glad that you had the courage to write it, to dive deep, because you had to dive deep into your stories, right? To your journey, as well as hold space for these other women to share their story. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much.
And until next time, my friends, choose love, choose joy, choose happiness. Blessings.
Thanks for listening to Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy. Join our sacred space every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern and meet leading female visionaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. Inspired Conversations with Linda Joy is a soulful venue where guests share the obstacles they've overcome, along with wisdom and lessons learned on their personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic and soulful living.